Good morning. Yeah, you can hear me in the back, right? Okay. So I asked Charlotte to give a talk today about children and the role of children in the Sangha. But also I want to add to that because we have a big week coming up. So this is like a vision statement about what we're doing. We're a temple, which means we're not a monastery or a retreat center or a cave or a private household. A temple means that we are community-driven, and the role of the temple is to grow and awaken human beings. So we can start young. We don't just start as adults and then try to fix things that have been screwed up. We want to start at the very beginning. Temples are about children and families and kids, in addition to being about adults and old folks like myself. We have to create a structure here that allows people to grow and wake up as Buddhas, and that's why we have the temple and we do the activities. As people know, with children, one of the first things we have to do is establish a safe environment, a safe, healthy environment. So that's why here I'm going to tell someone to move their seat so we have safety. We have this roll called Dorje Kasung, and I need Brian to be sitting by the front door. Okay, so you always need someone sitting to greet people, but also a sense of protection. Our artist Phoenix was very nice. Closed doors and trains coming through. But like if someone walks in late, that's Brian's job, right? Look at the door. Is this person lost? Do they need to be here? Are they safe to be here? Likewise, so you know, Dana is watching this other entrance here, so then that's safe, right? So then also we have, we're missing one Dorje Kasang. Deb, she usually sits in back too, and then Dirk is sitting here looking like Dorje Drollo, so very, very strong like that. I think there might be somebody outside, so check, you know, right now, see if there's someone who needs to come in. Yeah. So you want someone greeting, and you want someone kind of in, somewhat in the center, the way Dirk is, creating a sense of safety and energy. And then, you know, I want Dana guarding the door here. Yeah, good. So someone's coming in. Very good. So I always feel very safe around Dana. I wouldn't ask her to take a bullet for me, but she might, you know? I know. It feels fantastic, you know, like that. So in raising children, but also raising our inner Buddha child, yeah, we need safety and health. And we want to make sure, like, the child, which is ourselves too, they're happy, right? You're also with babies, you're always thinking, well, okay, did they look healthy? They've got fingers, everything. And then you say, oh, that's a happy baby, or something like that. And then the next thing is we want the child to start being creative, being interested in their environment, and you know, starting to talk and interact. So the creativity piece is really important in our tradition. That's why we make a big investment in imaginative practices. So imaginative practices means that we know how to work with appearances. Appearances is all the phenomena that you see around you. Everything's appearance, right? people are appearing, colors appearing, forms and shapes are appearing. And they're changing, right? And they have a lot of multiplicity about them. It's because of appearances, generally, that we get confused. So, because they're changing and we don't know, and then we get scared, and then we fixate on the appearances, and then we think we're a fixated appearance too, called the ego, the self, or the Atman. So we get very confused. So in our tradition, we understand the unity of emptiness and appearance. So appearance arises as completely open space and appearance at the same time. That's why we do these practices where we're visualizing Chenrezi or Tara or Padmasambhava or Tsongkhapa or other forms of Buddhas that could manifest in non-human form, so that we understand and are not confused by the unity of openness and appearance. That's why we're confused, right? So we don't know how those work together. In our tradition, we practice towards understanding how appearance and openness, how mind and form, just like it says in the Heart Sutra, work together. So we set up a situation where we can foster this creative energy, not so we're not just confused, but also this energy in it. If we know how to use appearances, we know how to use form, we know how to use all the senses, which are appearance, then we have a vast amount of energy to benefit ourselves and others. Plus, it feels good, right? Feels good to be alive, yeah. So this bliss energy, this powerful energy of helpfulness and the sense of non-confusion, we bring it all together here and try to manifest it in the temple. So that's why we have the tankas, which are specifically blessed appearances, so to speak, and we might have the whole temple mandala, which is also blessed. That's why we have these yellow brocade things falling down, which are meant to be flowers. Flowers falling on the Buddha. And why we have the tankas. And it's also why we have these specific colors to energize us, to help us to wake up. Specifically, that's why we're putting energy and time and why we have an artist like Phoenix to do the vestibule. In Latin, vestibule is like you're walking into the temple. When I was having a conversation with Phoenix, he said, what's the Tibetan for, you know, antechamber? And so maybe some scholars, you know, look that up. Maybe Dirk will look that up for me. What would be the temple? what's that? Yeah, ask Lama Tony. So when people come in, maybe you're looking down, like where to put your shoes. But I want you looking up. Okay, I want you looking up at the mural, right? So we first see the red door, the blue medicine Buddha, so we're attracted. Okay, there's healing energy, there's opening, there's warmth, right? But when you come in, I want people to go, oh. So to look up, to see like a sense of vastness, a sense of environment. So we're going to add some extra lighting and things like that. So you just want to look up. Then you can take your shoes off. Okay. Everyone, where did my shoes go? Okay. Because we need a space between the so-called outer world, everyday ordinary experience that is fixated, that is conflicted, that is struggling, and the mandala world of enlightened energy. And our small vestibule, our antechamber, is that transitional place. We need that. So that's why I've asked Phoenix to do a lot of the artwork. So I want people to look. You can look on the way out too, but notice if someone's behind you, okay? So don't stop. Before I walk, yeah. Just kidding, no. Just look up, you know, like that. Because in traditional gompas, meditation halls and temples, even the ceiling has paintings. It's like Sistine Chapel. So I was joking with Phoenix that I'm feeling like Pope Julian. You know? Yeah, so Pope Julian would go like, you know, what's needed over here is some of that. And then Michelangelo would go, oh. And then we'd do it. And then, you know, so back and forth. So Phoenix knows I'm joking. You know, so I'm going to talk a little bit more about art afterwards and what we need to, the next step and to complete that project, like the Tara Shrine and so forth, after Charlotte's talk. But I wanted people to enter that imaginal world of the child, you know, where things are alive, where we can be a butterfly or a butterfly can become us, yeah? Like that. Well, I'm delighted that Charlotte is here, and she'll have a time for a short discussion, and then I'll say a little bit more about art and imagination, right? Okay, here you are. This first time giving a talk, right? You've been around for a long time. 10 years, okay.
Just make sure it's turned on. Okay, it's unidirectional. Okay. I'm used to speaking into a mic rather than at a mic. So this way I know that you can hear me, whether you want to or not. Let me get my feet under here. This is a little tricky at my age. But thank you, Dana. That's very helpful. Okay. So building on some of Lama's statements, we're talking about children as treasures of the temple. And we have many treasures in this temple. We are so blessed. We have our wonderful teachers, Lama Jinpa, Damcho Rinpoche, Geshe Damcho, and Jado Rinpoche, and the visiting teachers we get. It's just an amazing embarrassment of riches for us. And so we are overflowing. The temple itself is a treasure. For those of us who have been around back in the rental spaces, this is just mind-boggling. To have a place to come every time that every week and different days of the week and times of the day and various activities going on makes it an incredible treasure. The building itself, the grounds, the gorgeous artwork that Phoenix has donated, contributed, and the colors and everything. It's just our imaginations come to life. And it's a wonderful thing. I'm so thrilled with it. And our children, we know they're treasures to their parents. Sometimes they're pains to their parents, too, but they're treasures. But what makes them treasures to the temple and the Sangha? Well, Lama touched on some of that. Very importantly, they are the future of the temple. We won't always be around. This is what makes them so important to our community as well. They're the ones who will continue these efforts or not. So if we don't instill in them a love and respect for the temple, an awareness of what we're doing here and the importance of it, then the temple has no future, and we've wasted a lot of effort and energy and love in creating something that will go away. So it's tremendously important that we take care of our children as part of the temple community, part of the Sangha. So if we want to see the temple continue over time, we need to encourage families and their children to participate. And I was raised as a Presbyterian. Lama has mentioned that he was too. But in the way I was raised, children were tidied away into Sunday school. And they didn't disrupt the Sunday services because they were out of sight, out of mind. I taught Sunday school as a teenager and as a young mother, and I never questioned the practice, but I can understand that the energy and short attention span of youngsters wasn't quite compatible or completely compatible with sermons and ceremonies. My own son at his christening, he was about a year old, decided to help the pastor out by talking back, which was very amusing to everyone there. It didn't move things along very fast. I never experienced any other way, even at Lion's Roar, until we had the temple and we began, until we began to participate in events with the Mongolian Sangha that eventually became Zanzibar. So that was when Geshe Damcho joined us as a teacher, and we got to know the Mongolians. They brought their children everywhere. They brought them to initiations, to talks, to empowerments, to indoor and outdoor events. It didn't matter. Their children were always there. And I noticed that even though they ran around and were active outside, they weren't really disruptive. And when they had to be in the temple, maybe they were playing off in a corner or maybe they were doing a little bit of moving around, but they weren't disruptive. And when they got a little out of hand, their parents would gently redirect them. And there was no big deal. Nobody thought anything about it. Isn't that amazing? The kids weren't out of sight, out of mind. They were right there, very much in mind, very much in sight, but they weren't bothering anybody because it's not the children that are bothering you. It's you that's being bothered by the children. And the thing that I also noticed was that they understood somehow that they were involved in something that was important to their parents, to their families. Whether they understood it or not, it was important. And that seemed to guide them somewhat. They realized somehow that this was an important thing and that maybe they had to tone it down a little bit. And it came naturally. It wasn't something that anybody had to scold them for, or nobody scolded the parents, nobody scolded the children. It just happened. We can make that happen here, too. And I think that's such a wonderful thing. So here we are in the present. We have a temple of our own, and we have children who belong to the temple and are an essential part of it. One of the many ways is that's different from the rental spaces that went before is that we have a place that children can be nurtured while their parents are in the temple. We had evening services in rental space, and the kids, it was school nights, since they were usually on weeknights. They might nap out in the ante room there, but they weren't really alive and engaged at that point. But this is different. Here, they don't always stay in the community room. Sometimes they wander into the temple at full gallop to show their parents something wonderful or exciting that they did. And that is a wonderful thing. Babies and toddlers may migrate lap to lap in the temple and absorb affection everywhere. And we're all responsible for all of them because they belong to all of us in a very real sense. We are an interconnected community. And unless we embrace our children and their presence we deny our future. So how can we do that? Well, if you find yourself distracted by one of the temple children, consider why you are distracted. What is your attention set on at the moment that it could be disrupted by a child's antics with anything except maybe a smile? If you're irritated or annoyed or distracted, what is there to be irritated or annoyed or distracted about? This is life. This is real life. And whose self is being injured by the presence child here? Think about it for a minute. What would be your reaction if a child came galloping into the temple right now? How would you feel? What would you think? What would your reaction be? Give yourself a moment and really consider that. Because it can happen. It often happens. Unless Taruko has them so immersed in something that they totally forget about their parents. We're extremely blessed to have a children's program here. But we're not paying enough attention to it. We rely on Taruko, and Taruko is wonderful, but she's one person. Lama Jinpa emphasizes that temple practice is community practice. We are an interdependent community, and we inspire and teach and help one another because we are all interconnected. We can't be any other way, whether we think so or not. We are a family of the heart. And that's the best kind. You can pick your friends. You have no choice of your relatives. In this case, you do have a choice of your relatives. And it's wonderful. Sometimes it takes practice to recognize the fact. For us, volunteerism is a way of life. And not just volunteering for great efforts or special events, but also just automatically doing the things that need to be done. We see it all the time here in the temple. People just picking up a yogi task that is there and needs to be done, and so somebody does it. That's what it's all about. That's how we live, especially when we learn to expand that awareness of interconnectedness beyond the temple and into our daily lives. And this is what we model for our children, teaching them compassion and concern for others by example. Taruko is just one person, as I mentioned. When children are involved, multiple people are important to ensure that someone is always paying attention to each child. When a child needs to use the bathroom or someone has a crisis, a single teacher has to abandon the rest of the kids and pay attention to the special need of that one child. With two or more adults, the weight lifts off everyone. If I miss a signal, someone else picks it up. It's just like in our yogi tasks. If I don't notice something, someone else does it. That's what we need to provide in our children's environment here in the temple. That's the ideal arrangement, and it's what we need. So what will it take to make that happen? A number of things have been tried or considered. We asked for volunteers. We advertised on Craigslist. We considered hiring, but that would affect our Subchapter S status and would involve wage handling and taxes and benefits and things that would just overwhelm our small corporate administration. Right now, Taruco has sporadic help from other members, and Andrew's daughters often pitch in. And it's wonderful to have them in there because they're children themselves, but slightly older, so they're wonderful interpreters. But if we have no steady volunteers, no sign-ups, no what have you, then what do? If the other approaches didn't work out, so what can we do? Remember that we want the program to grow and to involve more Sangha children, but we can't burn out Taruco or heighten the risks that go with not being able to see everything going on in the process. So I invite you to consider the practices we do in the temple, that they are only one aspect of Buddhist practice. Even more important is the way we live our lives when no one is watching. When we are first immersing ourselves in the teachings, when we're bright, shiny new Buddhists, we just want to learn everything. We don't want to miss anything that might give us a realization or open our minds to understanding. So that's natural. I was that same way when I started. But we do need to notice that Dharma is all around us. We swim in it all the time. We're in an ocean of Dharma. Everything we do on or off the cushion is Dharma practice. It's not just coming to temple. It's not just helping with medicine Buddha. It's not just any of those things. It's everything. It's how you react to pets that mess in the house or to children that paint color on the walls or to anything else, to the homeless people on the street. That's all Dharma practice. It's not a sacrifice to forego a teaching in order to help with the children. On the contrary, it's a profound practice in all the perfections, generosity, discipline, patience, effort, meditative concentration, and wisdom. Taruco tells me that even on days when she's not just raring to go in the morning, she always leaves after the services cheered up and glad she came. It's a transformative practice. This is an opportunity to see the world through a child's eyes, beginner's mind, without filters and judgments. In the fairy tale, The Emperor's New Clothes, there's a good reason the child is the one who sees the truth. He's the only one who sees that the emperor has no clothes, while those around him, including his parents, try to convince themselves that they see the clothes or assume that they're simply not advanced enough human beings to see them. The child sees what is there and what is not there, not what he's been taught to see. The child's wisdom mind is not cluttered with the preconceptions of the adults around him, so he can see the reality. We learn a great deal from getting in touch with our inner child's mind, and being around children is a good way to help with that. They remind us of what it's like. And for those of us who had children who are long grown, I've got great-grandchildren. We know that it's very different. A child looks at things entirely different. They can be fascinated by a little bug crawling on the ground and spend long periods of time just watching it move across space. as Lama Genpa says, we are practicing Dharma when we notice our reactions and examine them. I would suggest we practice our Dharma now and examine our reactions to the call for volunteers to help with the children's program. We are not asking for someone to do this every Sunday. Taruko has shouldered that burden admirably, but she has made a commitment that means she never gets away when she would like to go on a vacation or visit her daughter or something, because she thinks about the children in the temple first. Even if the temple provides childcare 50 Sundays a year, which it doesn't, we would only need at least one or two volunteers for each of those Sundays. That's not a huge burden. It doesn't have to be the same person every Sunday. You could pick a Sunday or two Sundays. And it's kind of like jury duty. If you are asked to do it, you're asked to do it, but if they don't need you, you don't have to serve. And so I was on schedule for last Sunday, and because I had been scheduled to speak, and Andrew and I swapped Sundays. And so I called Taruko and said, okay, I can help you with kids Sunday. And she said, well, it's a holiday weekend, so we might not have any. That's okay, I'll help. So then she texted me that she'd got RSVPs and nobody was coming. I didn't have any jury duty. I'm still going to schedule a Sunday when I can help, because now I'm kind of intrigued and I'm a little excited about doing it again. I've got grandchildren, great-grandchildren who are 2, 3, and 6. I've never met them. They're out of state. I probably won't meet them until next summer. I need the practice. So, what's your reaction to this call? My initial reaction was, I'm too old to deal with little ones and their energy. They might knock me down. You know, I can't keep up with them. But Taruko promised me a chair to sit in out of the flight path. And I find that I want to do it now, just not every Sunday. The key is commitment, the discipline to keep that commitment, or provide a substitute. That works. And the willingness to try a different kind of practice, just once or twice a year. If parents, older siblings, grandparents, and members of all ages are willing to stretch themselves a bit, our children will see what Buddhist practice truly is, and we all get a chance to help ensure the temple's future. Can't lose there. So now I'm going to throw this open to questions and discussion. Do we have another mic, or do we need to use this one?
What we need is the kids to come running in here again.
My reaction is a question. My reaction is a question. I did not grow up in a Christian church with Sunday school, except for a year in 1964 in Alabama when my parents went defensively, because we lived in Alabama for a while. And so when I came here, this feels like Sunday school to me. That feels like Sunday school to me. I went to a lot of teachings with Chagdutulka Rinpoche. And in his teachings and empowerments, it doesn't matter. Kids all over the place all the time. They'd run up, they'd jump up on his lap. So my question is, why do we have Sunday school?
Oh, yeah.
That's a great question, Dirk, or your comment, however you want to use it. Because the kids are very high energy, and this is a somewhat compressed space. When we have a full house or close to it, there's not much in here that children will be where they'll be able to do something or sit and listen or what have you. They're very restless. They're very high energy. Some of us can remember what that was like because it's not that long ago. Others have to really stretch. But because everybody has to learn starting somewhere. And that was the purpose of Sunday school and Christian schools and Christian churches as well, to teach children Bible stories, to get them familiar with some of the concepts. And Taruko does that very gently back there, and parents do it. And so basically what we're doing is we're raising Buddhists back there. But within the attention span of a child. And so it's really valuable. And some people won't come if they don't have something that they can, some place that they can park their children safely.
Yeah, that's a... Very good. That's an important, question, because, why do we do anything? But children, need to be around other children to learn, too, because, they develop at a different level. So the way they're going to learn how to get along, to feel their energy, to... feel their creativity needs to also to be modeled around other children. So they need both. They need to be able to learn how to be around kids their age or up and down different ages and be around that energy and support it. And they also need at times to be around adult situation like this. Just like we're adult children, actually. So we need to learn how to be have that childlike wonder but the adult responsibility at the same time. So we create separate spaces for ourselves, just like we create separate spaces for the children, but then we also have to mix them together. Oh, the hands are going up all over the place.
That's great.
Yeah, you could call on somebody, Charlotte. That's your...
Oh, I was giving it back, right? No, I was just thinking that, I understand children really need their own space and learning with their own kind of little energies, and also Taruko does fabulous things. But I've been in various churches where they did it where the children came in with their parents. And maybe through the first prayers, the prayers we read in the book, the children are with the parents in here, and then the children go off into their own learning space for the rest of the ceremonies or discussions or, whatever talks are going to happen, because that's something that may not be very helpful to the child. But at least they've been in with the entire group in the opening. So I don't know. I just thought that might be a suggestion.
Yeah, let me speak to that first, please. And in fact, that's what happens here in reverse. We go back to the back to socialize, and the children are there. So they have their own interactions with Taruko that include some Buddhist training in the gentlest way, and then the parents join them in their space. I've also seen that particularly in Unitarian churches, where they bring the children in and then for a little while, and then they're spoken directly to, and then they go off to their classes. It's simply a style, I think. I think that in this case, most of them are really eager to get going with Taruko. They don't want to waste any time in here with the grown-ups. Yes.
I don't know if I should speak now, but I think that for me as a parent, you know, my kids are all grown and I have grandchildren now, but can you hear me?
No.
Sorry. Hey, everybody.
Use the other hand.
To me, what I feel would be important if my kids were coming here with, or my grandchildren were coming here, is I would want them to be in the beginning to hear the prayers. Because I think that idea of hearing the prayers and growing up with that sound and those, and then when the talk starts, you know, then they would go. That would be just something that, you know, to consider. Anyway, here you go.
Behind you.
Hi, Charlotte. Thank you. I'm really new, and when you talked about how I just want to absorb everything, and it was, you know, all about being here, and that's exactly my experience. And so, I hadn't thought that maybe helping would be just the same, just different, but the same. And so, I appreciate you sharing that because it's, you know, something I can think about.
Thank you. See, there's somebody picking up a yogi task, passing the microphone.
Hi. I was wondering what the ages are that would be included in these children's groups and how big the classes are.
Well, they are whatever age shows up. And when the child is ready to join the Sangha in here, then they can do so. We have them as young as babies, toddlers, energetic children who are in, you know, the first few grades of grammar school. When they get a little older, they either help out back there, or they join us in here. We don't have a lot of children yet, and I'm hoping that we'll get a lot more because we can't lay this burden on just a handful of kids.
My other question was, because I'm new to this temple, is there some kind of a structure program? Because I wouldn't know what to teach.
I should probably speak to that because we're not doing actually Buddhist Sunday school. We're doing enrichment, artistic activities, so the children learn how to get along, work with each other, find joy in each other's energy, and be creative and do create things together. So we're not really doing Dharma Sunday school. So that's not a big push from my side to do that necessarily. You know, I like the idea of being around for prayers, and then they hear that's nice. You know, so it's more organic than we could do Dharma Sunday school. Some temples and Dharma centers do that, but we're actually just doing creative, interactive things with the kids. Yeah, like that. Yeah,
we're sucking them in.
You're all in. Okay, very good. Okay, get that name, Charlotte. Okay, like that.
Give me some glue and I'm there.
Okay, good. Yeah. So we're creating an environment here, not, you know, for to, you know, become a child of the Buddhas, meaning that we grow into like a wisdom that has the childlike wonder of it, right? So that's why we're doing the gardens too, because in our tradition, the Buddhas arise out of flowers. So Padmasambhava, lotus born, literally arises out of a lotus of a flower, flowering. And Buddha and the English word bud, connected, same root word, right? So the bud opens up with flowers. So that's why we're putting so much energy in the garden, too. That's why we, and I always think of the lights in the parking lot as part of the garden. So it was every year at night, tonight, if anybody, maybe Annette will be, so come over at 8:30 and tell me if the lights are on. Yeah, like that. We just spent over $1,000 on the lights. And this is all funded through donors here. Yeah, everything we have to do is sponsorship now. So the children come out of flowers. We come out of flowers, and the point is the temple building itself needs to come out of flowers. So we have a nice garden committee. Yeah, Dana, Sharon, Roberta. Where's Roberta? Hi, Roberta. Yeah, and me. So. Like that. So the children, as I see it, are like the dancing flowers in Nutcracker Suite, hopefully. Like that. Yeah. So, okay, we got one volunteer, Charlotte. Very good. You're good.
That's fantastic. You made a good pitch.
That's
okay. And when I talked about Taruko building little Buddhas back there, I was not referring to specific teachings. It's really helping them flower into compassion and help develop their social skills. And that's part of what we have to do. Susan?
I just want to thank everybody for putting up with my kids from time to time. They've been a little noisy sometimes, and I'm just so glad I can bring them here. They have a good environment to be in, and they love being here. They even like to come and look at the temple after they have their program, and they like to sit and act like they're meditating. They're not doing a very good job of it yet, but they're working on it. They've got the posture down. It's just really great that I can even bring my kids here. I never was able to go to a temple previously because I couldn't have a place to put my kids. So this is just a wonderful opportunity for the parents, and I'm just extremely grateful for all of you guys, you know, I guess welcoming them and being kind to them.
So. Thank you, Mia.
Hey, Charlotte. I'd also like to remind people who do babysit or jury duty, we record everything, and the recordings are available online or through our Google Docs, so you don't have to miss the teachings as well. You can hear them later on.
Thank you, Dana. I forgot to mention that. Okay. Mama, you want to take over?
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, the children can, participate in the prayers and in the singing, you know, so that's really easy, right? They could, we're singing Mixama. What else are we singing? Yeah, when people are coming in, what singing are we doing? Yeah, so... The prayers are guided meditations to create a sense of imaginative inspiration, and the singing activates the energy. So these are essential parts of our development, in addition to the visual arts and the sense of energy. So it's very nice that Peter and Michael are here. So we have the two big senior students sitting up front. It's really nice, you know. So they could come in. That's okay with me. Come in and sing and do prayers. You want to take a vote? Should we take a vote? How many people, is it okay if they come in, prayers, singing? Okay, there we go. and how many people, like, how many people want to make sure that when that's done, they go back to their Buddha field? Okay. Yeah, no, they need to play with themselves. Yeah, yeah. So do you have time for, we should do a short silent meditation, okay? And then I want to see a little bit more about art. Can we do that? Yeah. I'm glad Phoenix has the ladder set up there, you know, with the painting, so you can see that building temple, like with kids, like with maintaining the parking lot, like with the garden. Art is continually evolving, just like in the Heart Sutra mantra, going, always going. So I'd like the Donna from today's talk to go toward our project, and also I'd like to find sponsors so we can continue to have artwork here, have Phoenix carry out the visions I have for the temple and the Sangha. If people could look inside themselves and see, am I an art sponsor? And can I write a check today to Lionsource so I can help Phoenix out and continue our art project? That would be wonderful, because he's leaving on Monday and I want him to go home with $1,200 if possible. Many people haven't seen my wife Sabine in a long time because she had back surgery a year and a half ago and is still in a lot of pain. But if she was here, she would say, yeah, Lama's art sponsor and I'm a cat rescuer. So you spend all your money on art, extra money on art, and I spend extra money on rescuing and taking cats to the vet, you know. Actually, she's art sponsor too. It's enormously important. It's something I can leave behind for the Sangha in the years to come, a beautiful and inspiring and innovative temple. We need to find sponsors and donors for ongoing artwork too, because I'm going to make a pitch going forward, not just to have the mural and the vestibule finished, which is very close to being finished. So please gaze as you go out, but also the next step is to have the Drolkong, the Tara shrine, completed and put together by by the middle of October. So as some people know, I've had visions for many years of a Tara Madonna, a Tara with holding a child. Tara is generally called the mother of the Buddhas, but there's no visual form that I know of where that's depicted in the Vajrayana traditions. And there's no particular sadhana or practice text. So I'm writing a practice text around that sadhana of Tara Madonna. I want to have the shrine opened up and to do the practice and have it dedicated by the end of next month. This is quite ambitious. Just a nobody American Lama, but this is totally new to the Buddhist tradition. There's never been anything like this before, actually. So as I've joked, if we do the practice and some people come to a realization, then I will be a great Tirthan. If not, treasure discoverer. Or if not, then it'll be an interesting anomaly in American Buddhism. But I've been cooking on this a long time, at least 20 years ago. I met Phoenix and completed a framed painting now of Tara and other Tara sketches. So I've kind of kept that in mystical holding, and that will go in the shrine too. And the only tattoo I have is a Tara mantra tattoo. And my teacher said, this is so dumb. He goes, "That's really great. You put it in the wrong place." Yeah, I was like, "You should have asked first." I learned that one. You should have asked first. But I love it. It's on my right leg, just like Tara's, extending out, right? Like that. So like any good teacher, he said, "Well, now that you've done that, you have to do a million Tara mantras." I've done much more than a million Tara mantras, of course. But now I'm a little famous around certain parts, like when Kopan nuns from Gakil came here many years ago, and Senla, the nun, she says, "Oh, you're the hippie lama with long hair, earrings, and the Tara tattoo, yeah, like that." She says, "When we saw you, we didn't know whether this is for real or not, but they had a wonderful visit." That was the first visit the nuns came to in the United States, was at Lion's Forum. So I'm going to be back in the office, and if people want to hear more about becoming an art sponsor, which I am, if you want to join me in that, then that's really important. With sponsorship, I have to sound this way. It's great merit, great punya, because we're helping with liberation through seeing, liberation through creativity, and this is the primary way in Asia that people participate. They sponsor artists, they sponsor temper building, and this is great merit. Geshe Sange was here, he said, "Oh, Jinpa Rinpoche has created great merit through founding this temple." But, I share that with everyone who's helped found the temple here, the temple founders, some of which are in the today. But everyone can participate in the merit by childcare, by sponsoring artists, by just helping out. So I really appreciate it. But I'll be around to talk, and please look at the mural. It's essential when you walk in to look up, okay? That's important. And then you know, then you can put your shoes on, right? Generally, too, like in the future, as you walk out, there should be mural as you walk out, right? That's also traditional. I have to say it is not traditional to have the shoes inside the temple. It's traditional to have them outside, but yeah, in the bushes, Mike was saying, so the real thing is, yeah, they're outside, and then you come in, and even before you go in the temple, there's, of course, maybe a little donation box, and there might be somebody just sitting there with a little receipt. Handful, yeah. This is a good time to go to India, unfortunately, you know, for them, but now it is like $1 will, the exchange rate is 72 rupees. Who's going to India next? Someone should go and do pilgrimage. Let's end with prayers, okay? Virtuous actions. Guru Buddha. Into that enlightened state. That has not arisen, arise and grow. That which has arisen, not increase more and more. Circled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. And they are reaching for me forever. All beings, your happiness, may they all be your and ultimate goals. Great treasure of objectless compassion, Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom, Vajrapani, the tire host mantra, Nankapa, jewel of the snowland sages, Losang Drakpa, I make requests at your holy feet. This week, starting Wednesday, right? Or Tuesday? Wednesday? Yeah. So, the monks from Nari Institute in Ladakh with Geshe Sawang will be here constructing a medicine Buddha sand mandala. I think we're going to have it right over here. So it'll be very accessible, an incredible opportunity to meet and be around healing energy and artistic healing energy. Art saves lives is my motto. So please stay in touch or show up. We're trying to have someone here most of the time to not just the monks here, but also staff here. And then Saturday night, Kenshin Rinpoche will be giving a talk on healing practices in Buddhism. And Sunday morning at 10, not 11, next Sunday will be medicine Buddha, Basaji Guru, Jainang initiation. So, anything else you want to say about that, Susan? What do you think?
Potluck on Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm. so that we can give a nice meal to the monks and thank them for all their work, and also so we can, you know, nourish ourselves as we do all the setup for Saturday night and Sunday. So, if you have any questions on that, I'm going to talk about that with folks afterwards.
Thank you.
sorry. So please, anybody who wants to help. Time-wise, Saturday, I don't know yet. But the public talk, by the way, is at 6 o'clock, right?
Yes.
Yes, so it's 6 o'clock Saturday night?
Saturday night, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's wonderful, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's Friday night, there will be Medicine Buddha practice, 6:30. We moved it to 6:30. 6:30, and I'm going to ask Geshe Damcho to see if he's going to come and ask him to lead it this Friday night. So there will be a Medicine Buddha practice. So if you haven't done one, come. It's really quite wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, Michael brought up an interesting... So, of course, the monks take several days to make the San Manda, and then there's a ceremony to also dismantle and dissolve it. When we say dissolve it, we don't mean the energy just disperses. It brings it together, and then generally, if we can, we're going to make it to the river and offer it to the Nagas. So thank you for bringing that up. Yes, that's right. So generally, we have, that's very traditional to take some sand home, colored sand, blessed sand, yeah. So it's really fun, actually. Yeah. Renee, how are you? I'm better. Yeah.
We're going to go to the American at Sutter's Landing. We need to make little mappies.
Yeah, mappies.
Yeah, we need to make little mappies on how to get there. It's really easy. It's just going to be over the levee off of 28th Street. So it's like really close.
Yeah.
But we'll take it to Sutter's Landing. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Probably in the afternoon. The times when... that happening, generally Kenshin Rinpoche is very much on time. So, but we don't know exactly when the dissolution is. The idea is if you want to participate in the full practice, and then you hang out, you see, because this isn't like a show. It's like you give up. You give up your schedule, you run errands, and you hang out, and that's how the healing happens, yeah. To,
yeah.
No, but it will be sometime. probably, yeah. No, they'll probably it'd be probably late morning, something like that. I'm guessing. Yeah, when they start, I'm not exactly sure, but we could try doing an email blast, like, they're on their way, something. Yeah, we don't know exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to spend a lot of tomorrow at Geshe Damcho, and so I may have a better idea of what the schedule will be like. But yeah, it's kind of loosey.
Yeah.
You kind of got to just hang. Yeah.
I think L.A., from L.A., and they were in Colorado. So we're running a little late, but one last thing is sitting around kind of waiting for ceremonies to happen and teachers to arrive and developing the patient's acceptance of the non-arising of dharmas is an essential part of the practice. That's when it happens. Yeah. So, yeah, that's important. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Oh, yes. One.
If people want to check the parking lot lights tonight, we'll be in here.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I want to know it's working. Om Mahung. Thank you.